The role of the academic journal in scientific research is changing rapidly. A New York Times article earlier this year looked at the problem of pseudo-academic journals, which had names similar to well-established ones and which charged hefty fees for publication. More recently, Randy Shechtman, a Nobel Prize-winning U.S. biologist, said his lab would no longer send papers to several academic journals that some consider top-tier. But Shechtman contends their policies encourage scientists to pursue trendy research rather than more significant, less sexy projects. Joining us now to talk about the changing world of academic journals, Dr. Jim Pavarnik. He's MSU's Research Integrity Officer. He's also a professor in the departments of kinesiology and epidemiology. Dr. Pavarnik, welcome.
Thank you.
First of all, name a few of the more popular journals that are listeners might be familiar with.
Well, certainly Science, Nature, that's the UK's version of Science, New England Journal of Medicine, JAMA, used to be called the Journal of the American Medical Association. Those are some of the top ones that everybody hears about.
And review for us what function these journals actually provide for serious researchers.
Well, they are known as the top journals for a number of reasons. They're cited very frequently, meaning people will tend to read their articles and then use them as references in their own. They service a wide range of readers. So it's not a, let's say, an obstetrics audience or a pediatric audience. It's a medical audience or a general science audience. So your average scientist or your average person interested in medical science would read these before they might read their own little subspecialty journals.
Mm. So now entering into this world of academic publishing are some journals that have names very similar to established publications. Tell us about those.
Right. There are thousands now of in the last 10 or 15 years, and the U.S. has a couple thousand itself, thousands of these open access online type journals. And the open access means I don't have to have a subscription. I don't have to go to the library, or I don't have to have my own subscription to actually read the science. So it's very attractive to the reader. On the other hand, to the person publishing in those journals, it's very expensive. The page charges that virtually all journals have are extraordinary in these particular journals. That's how they survive.
And so talk to us about some of the problems associated with those open access.
Well, they're very attractive. They're very sexy to the scientist who might be frustrated not being able to get his or her work in the top tier journals. These open access journals offer sort of a quick fix in some cases, that you can get things published quickly, and you can get it published, period. And those are two good things.
So, do we have two camps developing here? Those that defend, you got a conservative liberal kind of divide emerging here?
It's not quite that simple, but you're close. You're close. There was a study, I don't know if it was a study, several months ago, where somebody wrote up a bogus research article and sent it to a number of these open access journals just to see if they'd publish it. He made up the names. He did all sorts of stuff. There was nothing to it.
And they got in?
More than half got in.
Word.
And a lot of these didn't even have the peer review system. The downside to that is he did not send it to the more traditional journal, so we don't have the answer as to whether they would have accepted it also. So that set off a big scientific debate on the value of that study, plus the whole issue that we're talking about this morning.
Recently, the winner of this year's Nobel Prize announced that his lab would no longer send papers to the journals Nature, Cell, and Science. I alluded to Randy Shechtman earlier. Some people consider those top-tier publications.
Right, those are.
And he says, Randy Shechtman says, that basically the journals focus on topics that are trendy and, quote, sexy, rather than having serious scientific import. What do you make of Shechtman's claim?
Well, certainly when you're the Nobel Prize winner, people tend to listen.
Yeah.
I think a skeptic might say that on more than one occasion, even somebody as great as this individual might have gotten a rejection from one of these journals and possibly held a bit of a grudge. I've read some of the give and take by various scientists on this about his opinion, and they agree that that's what it is an opinion. And the fact that he won the Nobel Prize. He was picked by an elite group of people, and he's calling these elite journals. So there is the opposing view to what he's saying.
He has his own online journal as well.
Right.
Does his own journal live up to the standards that he defends?
Well, that's to be decided. I think it's fairly new. I think certainly he's well respected, and people tend to give, and there are studies on this, give more credit to an article if you and I turned in an article on a particular topic, the same topic that this gentleman would turn the article in, he would more likely get published just because of his name, even if the science is exactly the same. So there's that sort of an effect going on too. So it's very complicated.
What a curious landscape this
is.
Some of this is follow the money, the conflict between the traditional business model of journals that actually have to sell product and an emerging movement that encourages this open access that you're talking about. Can you help us understand that a little bit better?
Right. A lot of the traditional journals, the ones that you would get in the mail or you would go to the library to read, that they have many, many advertisements in them. A lot of them are drug companies or whatever, equipment, medical equipment, and these folks pay a lot of money to be in the journal because a lot of people read them. So that's where they get most of their revenue, some revenue from their organizations as well. As opposed to the open access, they really don't have this, so they charge exorbitant amounts to the people, not only to people that are published, but there are some of these journals who charge you money just to submit. So there's not even a guarantee that you'll be published, but you have to pay on the front end. So it is totally a different business model.
You're involved in the departments of kinesiology here at MSU.
Correct.
Epidemiology. What journals do you read? What journals do your colleagues read?
Well, certainly in kinesiology, the primary one we read is called Medicine and Science in Sports and Exercise. It's the top exercise science journal out there. In epidemiology, it would be likely the American Journal of Epidemiology.
Are those old? Those are the old
Correct.
School type approaches?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. There are some newer ones that are out there that some of my colleagues have published in. I have an article in one, an obstetrics journal with some colleagues. But I haven't gotten into that mix too much.
Well, can you say that the open source publications have their place, but that maybe the standards need to be just marginally stricter? Is there a case for that?
I think there is a case, and I think I think it's a bad rap to call all open source journals substandard, you will. A lot of them have very high standards. A lot of them don't. And what's a mother to do? How do you know unless you delve into it? And they've exploded. There are thousands and thousands of them now. So to fight your way through that as opposed to, well, I know New England Journal of Medicine is a good one. I know this traditional one in my field is a good one. You don't have to mess with, does it have the good reputation? Now, that reputation is not perfect, but the open access one is still kind of the Wild West out there with those.
Do you anticipate new forums emerging?
Well, I think probably some blended models. I know now that the big issue, think about it, publication is the second largest capital we have in academia. The first is obviously bringing in grant money, but you have to get your science read by people. So it's very, very important to academicians to get your stuff out there. Well, if a traditional journal takes 10 months to get something out into the press as opposed to an open access that can do it in 2 weeks on the computer, where are you going to go? So now some of the traditional ones have their online versions that can hit the streets a lot sooner. So they're sort of blending the new computer read it online versus the magazine version.
Does the larger public play a role in this, or are we really talking about specialists? Are we really talking about people in the scientific community?
Well, I think the larger public can play a role because every night on every news station there's a medical report. And the medical writers go to some sources. And where do they go? They go to
NPR frequently refers to a lot of these journals.
Sure. Those are easy. Those were traditional. That doesn't mean the new ones aren't just as good and there's not something in there. But if you're a reporter and you're looking for this, how much time are you going to spend on these other journals when you have your traditional ones? So it's difficult.
Is this the kind of dispute that all of your colleagues have a take on? Is this a highly charged enough topic in your world that everybody comes down on one side of the ledger or the other?
They come down somewhere. I think there's a lot of sides of the ledger. It goes with promotion, it goes with tenure, it goes with annual reviews and what you call a quality journal, what is not a quality journal. It's the further we go, the muddier it gets.
Is there something on the timeline coming up ahead that you feel might resolve this or clarify this dispute?
I think if the journal editors, years ago there was a group of journal editors, they called them the Vancouver group back then because they met in Vancouver, medical journal editors that standardized the way that articles should be written for particular medical journals. And that went a long way with getting everybody, you know, singing out of the same hymn book. I think if you can do that same sort of thing with the open access folks versus the more traditional folks, then we might get somewhere.
Dr. Jim Pavarnik is MSU's Research Integrity Officer. We've been talking about academic journals. Jim, thank you very much.
You're welcome.